Well, now, veg and to veg, anyone? Our guest is Miranda Burden, whose new but already internationally recognised plant-based food production company, Food Nation, which she founded with her sister Josie Lambert, put plants front and centre on a plate. Miranda's a big fan of vegetables. Her favourite is the mushroom, which isn't completely surprising given the family business. Another of her roles is chair of Meadow Mushrooms. So pretty sure we're in for some Moorish mushroom recipes as part of our discussion this morning. Miranda also is chair of Live Ocean, a charity set up by America's Cup champions Peter Burling and Blair Tuke to improve the health of our seas. She's a busy woman. And she's with us in the Christchurch studio. Miranda, good morning and welcome.
Morena, Catherine. Thank you for having me.
I thought you might be sick of mushrooms if you've grown up with a family business like yours.
You never get sick of something as good as those.
Of course. That would be a risk, though, wouldn't it? I suppose it would be an occupational hazard.
Well, think about fungi and mushrooms as not just a single product, but a whole array of products. And there's so many things you can do with them. And then, you know, you never get sick of veggies, you never get sick of mushrooms. There you go.
Food Nation, I think a couple of years ago, this got underway as an initiative and backed by the Ministry for Primary Industries, if I'm correct. What was the brief for you and for Josie?
So like all great ideas, it didn't suddenly pop up in the middle of the night. It was really the culmination of a whole lot of thinking and reading and watching and years of experience. So the more we heard and saw about what was happening in the climate and the impact on the climate of our food systems, the more we felt like we needed to do something. And recognising that our food systems account for about a third of all global greenhouse gas emissions, we kind of went, well, if diet is at the centre of that, how do we shift our diets? And our other sister was the first person to really grasp onto eating way more veggies. And so as we looked at what was happening in the market, we saw an opportunity that it seemed a really obvious solution in New Zealand. We grow all these incredible crops and we have access to all these great ingredients. But what I couldn't understand is why no one was actually showcasing those. So that was the genesis.
Showcasing them how? Because, you know, the meat and the veg and two veg is a bit of a play on the meat and three veg that so yep. many of us grew up with. It's not that we don't eat vegetables, but you're talking about taking things to a different level or presenting differently. And this is where I'm interested in where this sits. We know that we've got a lot of push for the plant-based diets. We know that we've got the fake and a lot of the fake meats yep. and other products coming on stream. Where do you sit, though, in the offering? And was this precisely what the new enterprise was about?
Absolutely, 100%. So we sit in the centre of the plate, and that is really important. That meat and two veg, the veg are always the afterthought. They're always on the side of the plate. But actually, it's an enormous category of food. It's full of nutritional content, phytonutrients, protein, fibre, all the good things that we need in a meal that we've traditionally sourced from animal products. Now, if you start looking into dietary guidelines, you understand actually we overconsume a lot of animal protein, and that is what is causing a lot of the obesity and cardiovascular and diabetes issues around the world. So about 2.5 billion people globally are overconsuming in many areas. And what came out of a major report by Eat Lancet in, I think it was 2019, really made this extremely clear. We need to start putting plants in the centre of the plate. And when I say plants, I mean grains and legumes and nuts and seeds and vegetables and mushrooms of all types. So that's all well and good, but I didn't know how to do that because I'm used to making vegetables a side dish more than a centre of the plate dish, unless it's soup. So that was our challenge. So the Ministry of Primary Industries funding that you referenced before was incredibly beneficial and helpful because what we've tried to do is, and what we've achieved, is creating products where we use mushrooms and chickpeas as a base, and then we add in lots of other fresh ingredients and new novel crops that we're actually producing in New Zealand, and we present them in a format that people know. So we have a magic mince, and it's magic because it's just vegetables, but it operates and functions just like mince, so you can use it in recipes you already know. So our call to action is we had to be delicious. That's a absolutely no compromise there. We had to be nutritious, and this was really important, and all our products are 4 or 4.5 star health rated, and we had to be easy to use. So it's there's a lot of research out there, and it's just a sad fact that people will only make a change if it's easy, and I'm definitely a good example of that. So, you know, so all of those elements, delicious, nutritious and easy to use, were central to our thinking.
So let's look at some of the products. Straight away I think of the good old portobello mushroom. I was just showing some friends this amazing veggie stack I had a while ago that I'm going to try and imitate at home, because the good old portobello mushroom has the same kind of texture and well cooked can almost mimic the flavour of something like a steak. So that you don't have to do anything fancy with that necessarily. You are doing some things though, like with your magic mints. Again, you're not getting into the sort of the fake meat marketing. You're saying this is vegetables, but we are trying to just achieve a texture or a consistency, or give you vegetables in a way that they can be used in a particular recipe. So could you talk through a little bit more of how you're doing that with magic mints? Or I saw a replacement for beef Wellington on your website. What do you do with that one?
Oh, I love the fact you've gone through the recipes. Now, as well as your vegetable stack, we want you to try making them beef Wellington / mushroom Wellington. So what we've done is we've said, what are the main things that people use in the centre of their plate? And they use mints, they use patties, they use sausages. And then we've looked at what's available in the market, and you're 100% right. We do not want to emulate meat. You will not have a meat experience. It will not bleed or sizzle when you cook our products. What you'll get instead is a product that's in the shape of a patty, and we have essentially chopped up a whole lot of fresh vegetables. So, for example, we have a broccoli, pea and hemp patty that's got mushrooms and chickpeas as a base. We've chopped all those vegetables up, then we've blended them together. We have included some vegetable oils and vegetable gums so that they actually bind as a patty, and that's what you're getting. And when you eat it, you can see the hemp, you can see the mushrooms, you can see the peas, you can see the broccoli. So celebrate what you're eating, rather than trying to kid yourself you're eating one thing that's made of another.
That said, we do have that strong, you know, primal desire for different things in our food, the sweet, the sour, and the umami. So without trying to fake replace meat, we do know that we appreciate different textures and different characteristics. And do you build that into what you're making?
Absolutely. So, and early on in the process, and the process to do this has taken quite a long time. The reason we won the Best Meat Alternative at the World Plant-Based Awards was because we're not trying to be something we're not. So we're not trying to pretend to be meat. But at the same time, we knew that people would get bored of the same thing in 5 different colours. So part of showcasing vegetables is including and enabling you to experience all the different textures and tastes of those different vegetables. So we've found a lot of new and novel crops that have been grown in New Zealand, the likes of buckwheat and hemp and quinoa. We utilise kumara and beetroot, as well as mushrooms and all the other products I've said, and a lot of different spices. So that you have a really diverse range of experiences when you eat the products. So you're not just eating the same. Instead of asking you to eat steak every day, we're asking you to occasionally try these other products and have a variety of tastes for different occasions.
How are you going with local producers, actually? We spoke to some quinoa people up near New Plymouth, up in Taranaki, I think, growing quinoa as part of their farming operation. This, of course, is a South American seed, I think it is, actually, by nature. We think of it as a grain. Trying to think if it's actually, strictly speaking, a seed, but I can't remember. But anyway, they've begun producing, and hemp, obviously, long campaigned for diverse product that's had its versatile product that's had its progress thwarted in many ways. But how are you going and finding producers for some of these new novel crops?
So, I'd actually give a shout out to New Zealand growers. We are amazing growers, and one of the things that has been really fun has been engaging with people. And I think you're talking about Kiwi Quinoa, who's a company that we work with. And when I say we want to showcase, I don't mean that we're not just saying that. If you eat our products, you can see the ingredients in the pack in the products. We actually specify who we're using. So we've got on pack, we have a kumara, beetroot, and kiwi quinoa patty. That is because that's the brand that we're using, and we're exporting that to the world. So buckwheat, as you say, quinoa is very famous, and it's the queen of grains, I think, or the queen of seeds is, I think, how they refer to it in South America. But equally, we've just found a wonderful grower who's in South Canterbury who's growing gluten-free buckwheat. Now, buckwheat is gluten, is it's not wheat, it's a fruit seed, weirdly, but it's this fabulous, crunchy, it's a product, and it's a complete protein. So it's one of only two plants that are actually a complete protein, so it contains all nine amino acids. So we've had a lovely time working with lots of growers of new and novel ingredients like these, but also just growers around the country and looking at what there is and what we can use.
Well, we have interviewed Dan at Kiwi Quinoa, but also we've interviewed the farmers at New Zealand Quinoa. So great to see straight away mentioning quinoa production happening. So that is good to see. Let's just roll back to where we were. You mentioned that you are using binding agents, natural food binding agents. So straight away the question becomes, do you need preservatives for these products? And I think they do have a reasonable shelf life without preservatives, some of them, Miranda. What's the story?
They do. So part of our challenge was we wanted to be a clean label, and that's a big deal. And what that means is that we don't have a whole lot of E numbers and ingredients you don't know. If we're going to showcase the veggies and the plants that we're using, then we want you to look at the pack and actually know what you're eating. So that was quite challenging, I'll be honest. That took us quite a long time to get the product to actually function. But what we've found is, as a category, there's lots of new ingredients coming through, and these are things like faba bean proteins, and we've tried all sorts of different grain and legume proteins. And through the process that we apply, so we chop up the fresh vegetables, and then we very quickly flash cook them, and then we use a blast freezer to cool them down, and that combined with the right kind of packaging has enabled us to get a 4-week shelf life. So it's the same way as you vacuum pack fish or meat. It's the same conversation around managing the gases within the packaging so that you can avoid preservatives and just create a sterile environment.
I'm hearing a heck of a lot of investment in plant, pardon the pun, in physical plants straight away, and has there been?
We're still pretty small. I'd hate to give you the wrong impression. We are very much a startup, so there has been more investment than I wanted there to be, or more investment than any of us hoped there would be, but that's just because no one's doing this. So we've found that to be able to create the quality of product that we wanted and to ensure the sanitary, low allergen environment, we have had to invest in plants. But we've also worked with lots of great people who have supported us in lots of ways. So we've been very lucky to be able to get this far. And now our challenge is obviously to scale.
What else? Is it vegan? Just what other boxes do you tick for? And you mentioned allergies. What other boxes do you tick?
So we tick a lot of boxes. We tend to focus on what we are, not what we're not. But having said that, at a production level, we're gluten-free, dairy-free, nut-free, soy-free. We're vegan certified, vegetarian certified, and I've already said gluten-free, but we're also gluten-free certified. So
it does matter, doesn't it, when you are starting, I suppose, with a fairly niche market and one that you hope to grow. It does matter that you tick those boxes?
Well, so it's an interesting question. So one of the things that sat behind this project was a desire to create a product that people could all eat. So food for all. And that's about being inclusive in terms of all the different food, dietary requirements. So everyone can have one meal together at dinner time, whether you're eating vegan or you're gluten-free. We wanted that, you know, food's about pleasure and enjoyment. And that joy really sits at the heart of what we're trying to do. So we didn't want to create a whole lot of niche products. And the market in New Zealand is a little bit like everywhere. There is a third, it's been quantified that there's at least a third of New Zealanders are now reducing their meat. So it is a very small market at the moment, but it is growing at the most phenomenal rate. And we want everyone to be able to enjoy these rather than just certain niches.
So let's look a little bit more at the sausages. We haven't even mentioned the sausages yet. I can't believe it.
That's okay. They haven't been launched yet. They're coming. They're coming. Right. You're the first to hear.
So where are you at with them?
We are due to launch in the next couple of months.
Okay.
And I'm really excited, and they're really exciting, and they're our first products that we'll be using buckwheat. So that's great.
Cauliflower, ginger and turmeric patties in there as well, all the good stuff. Let's look. I'm obsessed with the mushroom Wellington.
Oh, good.
Tell me how you make it.
The mushroom Wellington is close to all of our hearts, is for all the reasons you've already touched on. So mushrooms are an amazing product. So they're environmentally incredibly efficient and very circular in the way they're made. So they've been a great base for us because they're also nutritionally total superfoods. They're full of all the essential vitamins and minerals. So we've looked quite hard at how we can really utilise them in lots of different ways. And the mushroom Wellington is one of those weird meals that we have had so many people asking for. That, along with sausage rolls and mince and cheese pies, are sort of the three we got a lot of requests for. So we take our mushroom mince. Actually, what I would say is we take our mushroom mince and we utilise mushrooms around it, and we apply the same sort of methodology that you would doing a beef Wellington. But I'm going to send you to the website, which is foodnation.co.nz, because all of these recipes are there, and they will do a much, much better job than I ever would in articulating it on the radio at this moment without it right in front of me.
Excellent. You are listening to 9 to Noon with Catherine Ryan on RNZ nationally. Our guest is Miranda Burden, who is chair. What is your current position? Help me out with your current position at
At Meadow Mushrooms?
Yeah.
Yes, so I'm at the chair.
You're
at
still chair at Meadow Mushrooms. In her ample spare time, she has with her sister launched Food Nation, which is what we are discussing, and we'll talk about another initiative at the moment. So then the question is, when it comes to selling, the old sort of time-honoured challenge of getting into supermarkets and building a customer base. But these days, of course, more and more people using the food delivery services. Have you got some useful contracts there that are spreading the word?
We have. I would actually, going into New Zealand markets has been a really great experience. We've had, both from a consumer level, we've had the most amazing feedback when we've done tastings and shows. People have just said it's a very simple solution to what, for a lot of people, they found a really challenging situation around the climate and as to how they, and diet, how they do put more plants on their plates. So we've had this amazing feedback at a consumer level, at a retail level, and with the likes of My Food Bag and the Whoops of the world, they've been amazing. So they were the first people to put us in the market, and they've been
really...
So you
began with My Food Bag?
We did actually begin with My... We began with... Our whole plan was to start with food service and to start with direct-to-consumer because we wanted people to experience the product in a safe environment because it's new. It's a new paradigm. And then we hit COVID. So we launched, you know, mid-COVID. That was a little challenging, I have to be honest. Really hard to tell people about a new product and give them an experience. So... we launched My Food Bag was the first people to put us in market, and Whoop was equally, which is another home delivery. The Food Box has been great. But then a lot of this, we've seen a lot of pickup from a lot of the supermarkets, and we've just this week gone into 20 countdowns, which is really exciting. So we're starting to roll out nationally. The food service side has been fantastic. Gilmore's, Trent's, Bidfood, all of those sort of distributors. But it is a challenge to, particularly at a retail level, to figure out where to go in store. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges that we're all working through.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And it's been the feedback, I suppose, I'm feeling slightly frustrated this week because I've had a number of people saying to me, oh, I was looking for you in store.
We can't find you. Mm.
Exactly. And where our website has got a page on it that says find us, and it's got all the stores. But they don't. The problem is
What do you call yourself? That's the thing. Because I know I can listen to your passion. This is about a new business for you, but it's not like you haven't been there, done that. Mm-hmm. I can hear that your passion is to be like a leader in what you hope will be a growing industry. Is that a feel cool?
Yeah.
Or growing
can't argue with any of that.
Okay. So if that's the case, what are you going to brand yourself, brand the food itself as being?
So it's a really interesting way of thinking about it. So if I start with the market and our consumers and who's buying it, they are, our core market is that group of people who are eating less meat. So it's, we don't, you know, the numbers.
Increasingly that's all of us though.
That's the point. In the UK, I think the numbers are 92% of plant-based meals are consumed by people who also eat conventional animal protein. And almost 50% of global consumers would define themselves as flexitarian, which is reducetarian.
So are we starting to call them vegetable meals or vegetable or you know, so plant meal packs? Because it's not like you are processing in the way we typically think of processed food. And the last thing you'd want to do is to call yourself a processed, food production. You are making a food product, but as we said, managing to do this without preservatives at this stage.
How do we position ourselves?
Exactly.
So I think the place probably the logical place is somewhere around soups or those kind of fresh meals, because we're in the chiller. So the place you find us is in the chiller. And the place stores have put us is with meat, which there is a certain logic. And if you do the research, it'll come back and say, yep, these are all people who are eating meat and want to eat one less meal of meat or three less. But then the vegetarians don't find it and the vegans don't find it. And if you put us with the vegetarian vegan food, the meat eaters who are eating, the reducetarians don't find us. So
we are stuck
between a rock and a hard place.
Celebrate plant part of the freezer.
So I'm with you, of the chiller.
Yeah.
Chiller, not freezer.
Chiller, just have a celebrate plants or
Catherine,
you need something catchy. You need something catchy that just says, if you want really interesting plant stuff, come here.
Absolutely. And okay. I would put it between the produce and the meat section. So it's really visible when people are getting their centre plate, the sort of the chunk of the meal solution.
And it's
solution.
Not often the, like, you know, the organics aisle and the aisles that you always think, that's not really me. I might whip in for one project, but one product, but it's probably not really me. I get your issue. And I guess the reason for talking about something, some obscure kind of supermarket placement, I mean, it's incredibly important for anyone trying to sell a product. But if you get outside of one company again and say, if we really want to push this along as part of our food production story, we need to know how to talk about it and how to label it and where to market it.
Absolutely, 100%. And that's a category challenge, as you rightly note. And it's one people are working very hard on, but it doesn't have a default solution. So because the category has slowly grown up and had sort of, it started with what I wouldn't call centre plate pieces, so things like pestos and dips and cheeses and milks, and then there are vegetarian options, but a lot of them have come in from overseas, so they're imported, or a lot of them use soy as a base and are very gluten-centric. So
you need great New Zealand-produced plant stuff.
Hey, I'm with you. So I think that the stores that have really are really humming are the ones that have got a plant-based section, and it's very visible. It's not tucked to the side.
And it's not niche. It's seen as, hey, come here for that one or two or three meals a week where you are looking for a centrepiece to your vegetarian meal that isn't a vegetarian lasagna.
Exactly. But I also understand, you know, from their side, this is a small category relative to sausages. So
it is, Miranda, but for health reasons, for excess, for emissions reasons, for every other reason on earth, it's one that you want to see on a sharp trajectory over the next 10 to 12 years even, don't you?
So, totally. And they are picking it up, and it's one of those interesting things where we're actually the push-pull from consumers and from the stores is sort of somewhat equitable. They're both trying to figure out what the answer is, and we're training each other as we go, but we haven't quite got the same answer yet.
One further question is price. Now, this can come into play. We've just talked about the fact that you've had to do some investment, and you will, in a physical plant, and particularly... Yep. If you're trying to avoid using preservatives, there's cheap ways to do that, isn't it? Cans are full of them all over a supermarket.
Absolutely.
But if you're trying not to do that, there's going to be a cost factor. And if you are also doing some actual producing of ingredients in your product, there's going to be a cost factor. At the moment, are you going to be in the section, or again, the consumer section, that is a little bit of a premium product? And is there a way to make it more widely available to the budget shopper?
So part of being food for all was not just about the diets. It was actually at a price point that was accessible. And this is a really conscious objective for both Josie and I. And it is a balance for all the reasons you say. We want to use really fresh ingredients. We don't want to fill it with gluten or soy as cheap fillers. So we've managed to keep it under the price that you would buy a comparable amount of meat. And at a reasonable price point, but it is not cheap. So it's not going to be with the sizzlers down the bottom end.
It's a fair point, though, true, but it's a fair point, though, that meat is a very expensive part of any family's budget. And, you know, people have to watch their protein and their iron intakes, right? Because this isn't meat, as we said. But to your point, we're also, most of us, eating far too much red meat. So if you look at it as straight replacement for meat, you can be competitive certainly with things that are above the cheapest bang, as you could compete with many cuts of meat.
Yeah, we can easily compete with meat, and we can compete with most centre plate options that you would put on the table. So I think if you look at some of the fake meats coming in from, or meat analogues, I think is the term, coming in from offshore, you can buy a Beyond Meat burger and it'll cost you $12 to $14 for two. And you can buy four patties of ours for well under $10. They sit between $8 to $10 depending on where you are. So we are significantly more cost effective than a lot of the analogues on the market.
When you again look beyond your own business, and you're someone who clearly does do that, you're at a stage of your career, as we said, where you've been there, done that, you can put your
I'm
feet
really
up.
Old, yep.
Quite young. You've chalked up a few achievements, Miranda. But, you know, I guess when you get to a point, don't you, where you're very, very focused on building your own business, and you're very, very focused on building your own experience as a business person, an entrepreneur, and then you get to the point where you think, actually, I want to be part of something bigger. My instinct is, if you're not there yet, that's where you're going. And so my question for you is, if we start to look at this being a much bigger part of New Zealand's food production story, and that means right from the growers and the farmers who are experimenting with quinoa, more than experimenting now, or new plant products, how do we push a whole part of our food production sector along? Like, what will it take to really put some emphasis behind this, as I said, as part of our overall food story, right from producer through to, you know, where you put it in your supermarket?
So yesterday I was participating in a Tipu Boma, which is part of the food and fibre conference and all about the future. And what was really tangible is the enormous amount of effort and innovation that's going on in the sector. I suppose my answer to that question is I don't think there's going to be a whole-scale switch to veganism at all. So there is still a future for a lot of different elements of our primary sector that we're very good at. But it is clear that we are going to have to make changes. And we need to be really proactive in answering these challenges. So, and we need to be working together to look for solutions. So we see our role as showcasing New Zealand as the garden to the world, as much as we are the farm to the world, and that is kind of a natural evolution of our historic food positioning. So there's going to be trial and error, no matter what, but if we don't get started, we'll never get it right. And we need to really face into the challenges that we're facing, because these are global problems and they're not going away.
They're global problems, but also they're global opportunities, and that consumers want this to happen. They're looking for the solutions, as you say, that are easy, that are at a price point, that taste good. So, you know, that demand could move very quickly if the products take off. Is there, what are the challenges of exporting, just finding Miranda? Because, again, that's how you scale up. And, again, we're talking about how do we replace dairy? How do we do this? Or how do we, you know, reduce the dominance of our dependence on dairy? And the exporting will always be part of that story because there's only 5 million of us. There's only so many beef Wellingtons, mushroom Wellingtons I can eat. Quite a few, I imagine.
Don't be like that.
Does it have export potential? Is there a challenge, again, with the shelf life and not wanting to use preservatives? Or is there export potential, again, for this as an industry?
So we know that we're great farmers and we know we're great producers. There is nothing to stop us from not being at the front of this race, essentially. There is huge export opportunity, and I think the win overseas and just the sheer number of requests we're getting for export is a great testament to that. We still need to be innovative and creative. We can't just do the same old as what's already happening out there. And a lot of people are investing in new ideas and new innovations to see how we can participate in that. But the shelf life issue, there's a real acceptance at the moment of people distributing things frozen and then defrosting at stores and places around the world. So we're not overly concerned about our capacity to ship. There is obviously the cost of that transport and we need to be quite smart as to how we do it. But yeah, New Zealand has an amazing brand internationally, and if we can demonstrate fresh, clean, healthy food coming out of here, I think there's a huge market opportunity for it.
All power to you. Good to talk. Thank you, Miranda Burden, who is You're welcome. Who's co-founder with his sister Josie Lambert of the food production company Food Nation. Of course, she's already chair of another business, the family business, Meadow Mushrooms, among other involvements she has as well.